we're speeding along. So I don't want this to become just review a couple of points. It's this idea that we're going to develop tomorrow morning about air. He mentions it as the symbol of the Buddhic plane of spiritual love. Spiritual mind, spiritual love, spiritual will, the three parts of the triad. And when the three above enumerated, see, what are the three above that are enumerated? That's right. Water, land, and air meet. When these three are above meet, it's indicative of focusing in the soul consciousness and the centralization of the man in the spiritual body. Now that word spiritual, there's a hint here, because he talks about Buddhic being the plane of spiritual love. So what is the spiritual body? The spiritual vehicles are above the causal vehicle. And that, I think he's giving us that hint. So it's almost as if that the, as if the true magician can even focus outside the causal body. And when we say outside, we don't necessarily mean spatially outside, but within the Buddhic energy. So he says from that point of power outside the form, so it's either going to be it's probably Buddhic or perhaps causal, but I don't think so. From that point of power outside the form, from the central sphere of unification, which is another name for the causal body, and from the focus point within that circle of consciousness, which to me is the jewel in the lotus, the spiritual man projects his consciousness into the midway spot within the brain cavity where the magical work must, in relation to the physical plane, be carried out. So it's as if, you imagine the Antikarana linked to Buddhi, position your point of tension within the causal body, imaginatively, and especially within the jewel and the lotus, and then imaginatively project the stream of energy through the top of the head into the cave, we can call it etheric cave, within the head, and then you can let the pineal stimulation take care of itself. So we're going to practice this tomorrow morning. And even if we cannot really focus our consciousness on the Buddhic plane, we can at least attune to the Buddhic plane. And if we do that, we will bring in the spiritual love we need for the white magical process. The ability to project the consciousness from the plane of soul realization into that of creative magical work on the etheric subplanes is gradually made possible as the student in his meditation work develops facility in focusing his attention in one or other of the centers of the body. And some of the work that DK has given in discipleship in the New Age, you practice that. You practice, in a way, focusing a stream of energy in one center after another. That's particularly in, the meditation in Dino, the first meditation in Dino 2, the second meditation, and the third meditation are all about focusing your attention in different centers. from the heart to the head to the throat to the ajna, and even all the way up and down the spine. He says, if you do this within your chakra system, you develop the ability eventually to focus in the soul at will, and maybe a Buddhic focus as well. This will be accomplished through the medium of the four centers in the etheric body, and then this thing that I emphasized, he gradually gains, it's such a brilliant way he put it, he gradually gains that plasticity, a flexibility, and that fluidity of the self-directed consciousness, which will enable him to play on the centers as a musician utilizes the seven notes of music. So, and this is all done at first, and let me just say, and your instrument is the creative imagination. That's your instrument. From center to center, from location to location, and then we rely upon the truth that energy follows thought, or energy follows your attention, which is what it can really mean. When this has been achieved, he begins to train himself in wider and more extended focusing. So he says, start with your own energy system and move around and get the feeling of being in different places. And then you can go wider and more extended and deeper. And you can learn to withdraw your consciousness not only to the brain, but to the soul on its own plane. And then send the energies back down. That's what he said. Send the energies back into the form. And he taught us how to do that. He said, he gave us this description of focus in the mind, focus in the astral, focus in the physical, all for the purpose of service. In other words, all of this focusing is service. If you change your focus of consciousness, it is for service purposes. Except when you are just practicing. And, you know, I suppose any one of us could do that. You know, all you have to do is think of a you just think of any point in the body. You know, basically, you are a movable, dimensionless point of being, being consciousness. Being consciousness. And so that is in a way the true self. And we're just changing the scene as we move this point around. So at first it's just an exercise in the creative imagination, but eventually the purpose of all of this, change the scene at will. And going somewhere is just a change of scene. You can imagine how the master can simply evoke the presence of another scene, and because the scene is in front of his consciousness, he is there. He is there. He's not somewhere else. He's actually present. So you get the sense that the presence of a master, all he's done is call upon, he's evoked another scene within the whole and has made it available to him. And then suddenly you feel he's here, even though he hasn't moved physically at all.
How does this relate to the learning? We always hear that you should avoid or be careful to meditate or focus on the centers or chakras.
Well, if you do it purposefully and under DK's guidance, and the more important thing is not to focus on the physical organs connected with the chakras. Okay. And there's certain... He says, don't focus on the glands, per se. Don't focus. He says, don't overdo the ajna, and don't overdo the top of the head, because they don't really have organs of distribution to let the energy flow away. The stomach is there, the heart is there, you know, other organs can help the energy flow away. But if you overdo the concentration on some of these that don't have organs connected with them, you can get into overstimulation problems. I would simply avoid strictly physical focusing, but when he tells you what to do, I think it's okay, as long as you don't overdo it. The fundamental secret of the cycles lies in this withdrawal and subsequent refocusing of attention. That's so interesting because, in other words, cycles occur like ray lords. Let's say the cycle of a ray lord is simply his attention and the withdrawal of attention. When he focuses his attention in a particular sphere, the ray comes into incarnation. When he withdraws his attention, the ray goes out of incarnation. And I suppose there is the matter of the intensity of focus. The more intense the focus, the more the ray is in incarnation. So in other words, basically what he's saying is that cycles are induced through the intentions of great beings. And that according to the timing of their attention or withdrawal of attention, so the cycle lasts. This is quite interesting. In other words, cycles are psychological, he's saying. It has to do with the presence or absence of a certain consciousness or a presence. You can make yourself present by concentration. You can make yourself absent by dropping your concentration. An energy is present because the being concentrates within a sphere of activity. The energy is withdrawn when the being withdraws his attention back into himself, just like the soul does. When the soul is focusing in the three lower worlds, we have an incarnation. When the soul is abstracting his extension, which we call the soul in incarnation, then there is death and withdrawal. So cycles have to do with attention and inattention. This is a very interesting idea. It's not just a mechanical thing that happens. It's a psychological thing. And it must be remembered that in this connection to the basic law underlying all magical work is that energy follows thought. If aspirants would remember this, they would live through their periods of aridity. That's the dry land, you know, dryness. That's what aridity means. With greater ease and would be conscious of the underlying purpose. In other words, they live in the midst of soul flows and soul ebbs. They live in the midst of cycles over which they have no control. But they can, in fact, hold the center and not become overly identified with the coming and going of the attention of a greater being. It might be asked, what are the dangers of this midway spot? This is interesting. So here's one danger. Too violent fluctuation between land and water, or between emotional response to life and life on the physical plane. Some aspirants are too emotional in the reactions, others are too materialistic. So we have the aspirations and the instinctual nature. And the effect of this is felt in the midway spot and produces a violent instability, maybe within the solar plexus, because for many people the midway spot is the solar plexus. The instability has a direct effect on the solar plexus center, which was the midway spot in early Atlantean times. and still the midway spot in the transmutation process of the aspiring personality. So, in other words, the life of the senses and the life of emotion have to be kept in balance. Life of the senses and instincts. Instincts. And life of the emotions kept in balance. So the solar plexus transmutes and transmits the energies of the sacral center and the center of the base of the spine, and is the clearing house for the energies focused in the centers below the diaphragm. So too much fluctuation between physicality and emotionality gives instability in the midway point. So if suppose your life of desire is very strong, but your life of practical work is very strong, and you're oscillating back and forth between them, your desires don't know which way to go. Here's another danger. Premature and uncontrolled pouring in of pure spiritual energy to the mechanism of the personality. I guess we would call this overstimulation. That vital spiritual force enters through the cranial aperture and pours into the head centers, and from there it will follow the line of least resistance, which is determined by the daily trend of the aspirant's thought life. So, spiritual energy will energize non-spiritual factors of your nature.
That sounds like a little trouble to me.
Well, it happens all the time. You know, people contact the high energy, but then they haven't purified other, and usually it goes down to one of the centers below the diaphragm, and then there's overstimulation at that center, which results in completely an opposite effect. I could tell you a story. Don't know if I should. It's a little bit blue. Spiritual energies will go to a center below the diaphragm if it is not purified, and the non-spiritual response may occur. Anyway, this person, who's a very sincere disciple, used to tell me about his group. That's a naughty story. You don't want to hear this. You don't want to hear this naughty story. Spoken like a true Scorpio. Okay, so anyway, they would have these wonderful full moon meditations, which everyone got so high on the spiritual energies that the only thing they could do with them was have a 2-hour orgy immediately following. I'm sure this is maybe not coming to you as a surprise.
That's what covens do all the time.
Do they? Where have I been? I thought to myself, you know, this is really a rapid fluctuation in the emphasis upon centers, I thought. I'm sure everyone had a good time, very spiritual time. I'm not sure about covens, I don't know much about them. Here's another danger. Another and rather potent danger is the result, literally, of bringing together of land and water. It demonstrates as the pouring into the brain consciousness, the land aspect, see how he defines it, of the knowledges of the astral plane. Because, you know, what can happen here is the etheric web is thinned too much or ripped. One of the first things an aspirant becomes aware of is the tendency to lower psychism. It is a reaction from the solar plexus center. But this midway point can be utilized as a jumping off place into the world of astral phenomena. Now, remember, we have been defining death by drowning in several ways, several different meanings. Here's another one. This premature meeting of land and water will produce death by drowning, for the aspirant's spiritual life can be swamped and entirely submerged in the interests of the lower psychical experiences. So immediately the astral plane comes in, fills the brain, and this is not the same thing as being drained of your vitality. This is just being overcome by the astral plane. As a matter of fact, it may even feed your emotions and your psychism. It is here that many worthy aspirants go astray, temporarily, it may be, but the times are so critical that it is a matter to be deplored if any time is lost in futile experimentation and the retracing of any path chosen. So, you know, he had this one student in his group who was a astral magician, and he kicked him out. He said, look, the so-called people you're talking to on the astral plane aren't real at all. They're just old astral shells. You're wasting your time. You are engaged in a non-spiritual pursuit. So let's attune to the soul. But the man was not interested. He was more interested in the astral magic. So that was that. The clue to the significance of these words is to be found in the recognition of the following occult fact. The place where land and water meet, where water and land meet, is the solar plexus center. The place where water, land, and air meet is in the head. Now that's really interesting and really important, because air, in this particular case, air is the Buddhic influence. Air is the Buddhic influence, and also the etheric nature, the vital airs. Land is the symbol of physical plane life and of the exoteric form. Water is the symbol of the emotional nature, and is from the great center of the personality life, the solar plexus, that the life is usually ruled and government administered. When the center of the direction lies below the diaphragm, no magic is possible. Or at least not anything we would call magic. Maybe there's some of that old, you know, maybe shamanistic magic of certain kinds. You know, the and even lower things, because some shamans are high. But sort of, you know, witch doctorism and other things that are the magical instinctual process. The animal soul controls, and the spiritual soul is forced to be quiescent. But air is the symbol of the higher life, in which the Christ principle dominates, that's Buddhi, in which freedom is experienced. In other words, your spirit flies free on the Buddhic plane. Free on, and the Egyptians have this down. They dramatize that as the Ba escaping and flying free at the fourth initiation. And Horus, who is the solar angel, the falcon, he returns to the sun. So they understand what this is. And the soul comes into full expression. It is the symbol of the Buddhic plane as water is of the emotional. So definitely, the Buddhic plane is involved in the place where land, water, and air meet, which is an etheric place, but the Buddhic plane is in alignment. When the life of the personality is carried up into heaven, presumably the causal body, and the life of the soul comes down to earth, there is the place of meeting, and there the work of transcendental magic becomes possible. And when he uses the word, this is a hint, transcendental, he's just told us something very interesting. The word transcendental refers to the cosmic ethers, cosmic etheric planes, and transcendental mind is Buddhic mind, the transcendental mind. So transcendental magic becomes possible in alignment with the plane of spiritual love, from ether to ether. And it makes it so deep, it makes the subject, this Antikarana, so necessary, you know, to be a white magician, because you have to deal with the spiritual triad. This meeting place is at first the place of fire, the plane of mind. Fire is the symbol of the intellect, and of all magical work is an intelligent process carried out by the soul and by the use of the mind. So we've got three minds unite, and we also have what's called soul, mind, brain in the magical process. To make itself felt on the physical plane, a brain is required, which is receptive to higher impulses and which can be impressed by the soul. So that's, you know, let's just say buddhic and causal body, because there's a part of the soul which is buddhic. The central petals of the soul are buddhic in nature. It can be impressed by the soul using the citta, or mental substance, citta, in order to create the needed thought forms and so express the ideas and purposes of the intelligent, loving soul. So here's one of these sequences from the buddhi, or air, the spiritual soul, to the soul, ego, or higher mind, then to the soul-infused lower mind, and then to a place in the head, the light in the head, produced by silence, peace, discrimination, and dispassion, as we meditated on this morning. Now, these are recognized in the brain and are photographed. All of these images, stimulated by buddhi and the soul, into the mind, into the brain, they are photographed on the ethers, vital airs. They are photographed on the vital airs and image forms. And when these vital airs can be sensed by the magician in meditation, and the thought forms imprinted on this miniature reflection of the astral light, then the real potency and magic can begin to make itself felt. Now, the astral light may be, there's different ways of looking at it. It can be the entire etheric planes. Like DK, well, like HBB said, astral is etheric. And etheric is sparkling and starry and full of light. That is not the astral plane. The astral plane is not so much involved. So when we, you know, the term astral light is ambiguous. It sometimes refers to the emotional plane, but often can mean the etheric. The brain has heard, yes?
In the beginning, when the alchemist called it the astral plane,
yes,
it was the etheric plane, but the soul and I, but it's
exactly
not the etheric what it really was looking at, but it
was filled with astral energy. Yeah, we discussed that one yesterday, exactly what you're saying. That in the beginning, the etheric body was so filled with emotional energy in the average person that it being the astral body, the term astral began to mean emotional and then was transferred to the emotional body, which he said is a confusing, foggy place with no starry, radiant quality at all, the way it stands at the moment. So that's very interesting. But anyway, what we're talking about is brain photography here. You've got an impression. It's coming from the world of ideas. It goes through the soul. A form is made on the mind. Maybe it generates some desire or vital force on the astral plane. Eventually, it passes into the ethers of the head as an image and is photographed on the ethers of the head called the vital airs.
So are you saying images without light are from the astral plane?
Well,
images
okay.
With light.
Images, period, are from the astral plane.
Yes.
And it just depends on what level of the astral plane we're talking about.
Yes, okay.
Because I think some of the higher levels are quite luminous.
Yes.
But he's talking about the average astral plane of the average individual.
Geometric shapes?
Those are related to the higher mind. And numbers, as we may have read yesterday, I don't remember, are related to the lower mind. Arithmetic and numbers to the lower mind, and geometrical figures to the higher mind. And they're not filled out, you know, they are a purer form of image. And on those archetypes, the normal kinds of forms that we see in the world are built. But we have lost the sense of the geometry. We don't detect it. But if we got down to the atomic level, like Leadbeater and Besant did, we would see all the geometry that started on the higher mental plane and above, even maybe on the monadic plane. I think there's geometry at that level as well. Anyway, inside our brain, we hear what the soul wants, the injunctions. The vital airs are swept into form-making activity, just as their higher correspondents, the modifications of the thinking principle, are thrown into analogous form-making activity. So, whatever forms are in the mind are photographed in the vital airs. So, mental forms are photographed in the vital airs. I'll just put that down. Mental forms are impressed upon the vital airs and become etheric forms. These can then be seen interiorly by the man who is seeking to perform the magical work. You know, probably somewhere between the pineal gland and the pituitary gland, we can register the image in our brain, in our etheric brain. These can be seen interiorly by the man who is seeking to perform the magical work, and much of his success is dependent on his ability to register impressions exactly, which he can do if his third eye is opening, and to see with clarity the forms of the process in magic which he is seeking to demonstrate as magical work on the outer plane. So we have mental forms and forms for work. We have mind and brain, and they both have forms. But we have mental forms on one level and etheric forms on another. It might be said, therefore, that there are three stages in the form-making process. First, the soul or spiritual man centered in the soul consciousness and functioning in the secret place of the Most High. I would almost say the jewel in the lotus. Visualizes the work to be done. This is not a sequential act, but the finished, completed work of magic is visioned by a process that does not involve the time element or spatial concept at all. So, buddhi is involved, because space and time end on the buddhic plane. Secondly, the mind responds to the soul, calling attention to the work to be performed, and is swept into thought form making activity by this impression. According to the lucidity and illumination of the mind stuff, so will be the response to impression. So if you have a dull, thick, slow, unresponsive mind, it will not register what the soul is sending down. So this is the first level of telepathy. It's called spiritual telepathy. We get it from the buddhic plane, starts above, and registers on the first subplane of the mental plane, and then goes down through other aspects of the soul. If the mind is a true reflector, and that's why we have to train our mind, if the mind is a true reflector and receiver of soul impulse, the corresponding thought form will be true to its prototype. In other words, the solar angel's thought form will be true. Solar angel will have a thought form on the mental plane which truly represents its intentions. If not true, as is usually the case in the early stages, then the thought form created will be distorted, incorrect, and, as DK says, out of drawing, to use, I suppose, an architectural term. It's not drawn correctly. It is in meditation that this work of accurate reception and correct building is learnt, and hence, in other words, we meditate, so we learn how to receive accurately and build accurately. And so all true schools train a focused mind, capacity to visualize, ability to build up thought forms, accurate grasp of egoic intent. Hence also the need of the magician beginning the practical work of magic with himself as the subject of magical experiment. Now this takes us to the master in the heart. The master in the heart meditation, which is also the ideal model meditation. DK says if you're a mental type, you might not want to do the master in the heart. You might want to make an ideal model of yourself as a soul expressing personality. So you work upon yourself first to bring through the egoic intent for your own personality expression. That's the first task. He begins to grasp the vision of the spiritual man as he is in essence. He realizes the virtues and reactions which the spiritual man would evidence in the physical plane. What's the soul trying to do through me? Me, the personality. Me, the soul in incarnation. He builds a thought form of himself as the ideal man, the true servant, the perfect master. He gradually coordinates his forces so that the power to be these things in external reality begins to take shape so that all men can see. So, we rebuild ourselves. That's the first act of magic. First act of magic. He thus creates the pattern in mind which hews as true as he can make it to the prototype and which serves to model the lower man and force conformity to the ideal first magical work. Very interesting that to try to become your ideal self is work of magic. To try to become your ideal self is a magical act. As he perfects his technique, he finds a transmuting, transforming power at work upon the energies which constitute his lower nature, a vital power, we might say, until all is subordinated and he becomes in practical manifestation. That's magic. He becomes in practical manifestation what he is esoterically and essentially. It's very clear, isn't it, that this is a magical act. As this takes place, he begins to be interested in the magical work which it is the function of all true souls to participate. So, after building himself, he builds other useful forms to serve the plan. Then the third aspect of the form-making process can manifest. The brain is synchronized with the mind, and the mind with the soul, and the plan is sensed. Without soul, mind, brain, no plan. The vital airs in the head can be modified and respond to the force of the building, magical work. A thought form exists then as the result of the previous two activities, but it exists in the place of the brain activity and becomes a focusing center for the soul. Now the soul can really work through the brain, not just the mind. And a point through which energy can flow for the performance of the magical work. So we build an instrument of expression within the etheric brain. The magical work carried out under the direction of the soul, inspiring the mind, which in turn impresses the brain, leads then, as the result of triple coordinated activity, to the creation of a focusing center or form within the head of the magician. The energy which flows through this focal point acts through three distributing agents, and hence all three are involved: the right eye for spirit, the throat center for the word, and the hands for creative energy of magical work. The right eye, the throat center, and the hands. The white magician works with the eyes open, the voice proclaiming, and the hands conferring. Beautiful idea. You see the spirit, your voice proclaims the word of the soul, your hands make the energy move in the lower worlds. These are points of technical interest to the experienced worker in magic, but of symbolic interest only to the aspirants for whom these letters are intended, but it's good to know. And then he closes the whole section by saying, that the inner vision may be ours, the eye see clearly the glory of the Lord, and the voice speak only in benediction, and the hands be used only in helpfulness, may well be the prayer of each of us. So it's a beautiful idea about how to get, you know, spiritual love, soul, mind, brain, expressing in line with the plan and fulfilling the magical work. Okay, well, thank you for coming back. probably it rounds things off a little and it helps us to be a little more ready for tomorrow morning's meditation. So are there any questions? Are you good? Yes.
Just a question. The place, the meeting place where the men go around
there. Yeah, yes.
You talked about the triad too. So
yes.
It's
aligned. It's aligned with the triad. Aligned with the triad.
Yes.
Aligned with the jewel and the lotus.
But I've had a problem with water. Where is water and the triad?
Yeah, okay, in a way it's the Buddhic plane. No, actually, believe it or not, just very quick, it's the atmic plane. Yeah.
Yes, I was thinking.
It's the atmic plane. Yeah. Water is the atmic plane. Yeah. But from another point of view, it is definitely the etheric plane in the head. And you know what? Where is the head, in what ether is the head center found? Because he gives this to us. He really gives this to us. And it's astonishing, but you can say, well, where are you really focusing when you're focusing in the head like this? And here it is, right here. And then, you know, I just gotta let you go. Here is the head center on the first or atomic ether, right there. Can you see that? There it is. So it's probably on the first ether where the true magician is working. He's probably working with certain transmitting devas who are using the atomic subplane to transmit the pattern from the soul. So that seems to be the true place in the head where this work should be done. Now it's very, the whole etheric level is the place where land and water and air meet. But land and water, he just talks about the oscillation between the emotional and the physical plane life. So he tells the solar plexus, land and water, the ethers in the head, land, water, and air, connected with the air plane, the plane of spiritual love. I mean, there are many technicalities to be worked out, but I think we get the idea that when we do this work in the head, we have to align with the soul and even with the Buddhic energy. Alignment. Okay. We'll see you tomorrow morning at the same time. Same place. Some of you, I think, are going to the lecture tomorrow, and some of you probably can't get tickets. But we really, you know, we really should have you there so you can clap. Clap, yep, yep. Clap from a distance. Just focus rightly, and I'll hear you. And tonight I'll see if I have anything to say. Okay, bye-bye.